Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Miss Nyagin Isquiak. We are the Bookwomen, and my name is Kayla, and I am here today with the aunties.
Auntie One, I am Tanya, and we also have
Auntie 2/3, I guess, Sheila. Yeah.
Just number ourselves.
Yeah, like a Dr. Seuss.
Yeah. Auntie 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, pick your auntie, like video games, pick your player, pick your auntie, which auntie needs to manifest today.
Love it.
Do you need the auntie to hold you, the auntie to yell at you, or, you know, the auntie to go shopping with create problems, create some trouble?
True. Well, we're talking about kids' books today, so we have our very kind and gentle auntie personas on, right?
Yes.
our no swearing auntie personas.
Our family friendly aunties.
I mean, in reality, did any of you had family friendly aunties?
No, I remember just my mom swearing all the time since as long as I can remember.
Yeah, my aunties are nuts. Love you.
Our family's perfect, so.
Oh.
Well, la-dee-da. Perfect family.
That's all I have to say about that.
All right, should we do a spoiler alert?
Yeah, so we're talking about the content of the books. So you've been warned. Yeah. Spoiler alert. We read the books. They're children's books.
Can't stop laughing. So let's talk about the books that we decided to choose for this episode. We have What's My Superpower by Aviak Johnson, illustrated by Tim Mack. We have The Walrus Who Escaped by Rachel N. Sean, Kitsu Alec Tinsley, illustrated by Anthony Brennan, and Elisipe and Her Baby Seagull by Nancy Mike, illustrated by Charlene Chua. And coincidentally slash not coincidentally, all three books are published by
Inhabit Media.
So before we jump into the individual books, let's talk about the publishing. Holy cow, these books are gorgeous. I really like them. Mm-hmm.
It absolutely
Even on the
are,
inside like... cover, there's artistry in every single portion of this book. The inside cover, even the logo has an image attached to it.
Yeah, and it's nice too. Like Inhabit Media, the publisher, is actually located in Iqaluit in Nunavut. And one thing about Inhabit Media is that they support Indigenous Northern authors, as well as a lot of their resources. You can also find Indigenous languages. So Inuktitut is often prominent within the books, as well as on their website. Everything is pretty much multilingual. So that's really nice. It's important to not only be kind of supporting Indigenous writers, authors, and illustrators, which unfortunately none of these books seem to be illustrated, though, by Indigenous illustrators. We'll talk about that later. But it's important to also support, you know, Indigenous language and, you know, kids seeing Indigenous languages from a young age as well.
Yeah. So it's an Inuit-owned independent publishing company in the Canadian Arctic. And while we're speaking about the publisher actually donated some of these books so we can give them away to our listeners. So thank you so much, Inhabit Media. You have won me over with your amazing books. I love them, and we'll be looking for more books around.
So, Tanya, speaking of, if people are looking for more books from Inhabit Media, where can people go?
Ooh, they can go to inhabitmedia.com. And you can I feel like Vanna White or something. I should just be using my hand gestures. So yeah, you can go to inhabitmedia.com. They'll ship it over to you. If you are in Edmonton, you can go through and order through Glass Books or even Audrey's Books, keeping it local. I'm looking at the website right now, and they actually have like a few really famous children's books like The Gruffalo. Everyone's heard of The Gruffalo, but they have it translated in Inuktitut.
Cool.
That's really cool. And they even have the ages like listed on their website.
Yeah.
I like it. I really like this. Oh my gosh, they have Iqaluit weather listed on the website too. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. Also for educators too, they do have a kind of curriculum package and a classroom resource package. So on their website, you can see educators. So any of our, you know, awesome teacher listeners, they have primary, junior, intermediate, and senior level books listed on their website, as well as, you know, the book studies for them. One of my favorite graphic novels is actually on there, The Country of Wolves, which they have the graphic novel study. It's also in French for our, you know, French-speaking Indigenous peeps that are out there. And that's actually a really, I mean, we're not talking about it in our graphic novel series, but that has actually been made into a really awesome short video, too, that's, like, super spooky and scary.
Really? I have not seen this graphic novel. I kind of want to order it right now.
You'll like it, Tanya. It's like,
is it dark? It's dark
and spooky. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's right up my alley.
Yes.
Love it. Okay. Yeah. I definitely want to watch this little video. It's about 11 minutes long, 11 minutes, 37 seconds. Oh, that's just the preview. Either way.
The video is short. Yeah, no, it should only be like 10 or 11 minutes. It's not a long video. So.
Oh, okay. So. That's nice. All right. Weirdly enough, Inhabit Media didn't even ask us to do this segment. I just like Indigenous-owned companies, especially ones that publish books and children's books, because it's really important for resurgence, right? Telling our own stories. Shall we get into it?
Yeah. What did y'all think of these books?
Which one should we talk about first? Should we talk about our favorite one first or our least? I guess I shouldn't say least favorite, but.
Let's talk about your favorites, because I know you and Sheila both had the same favorite book. So if you want to talk about it, let's talk about it.
Okay, so we both liked What's My Superpower by Avieg Johnson. Why did you like this book, Sheila?
Oh, because... like, it made me, like, smile cry in my heart.
Your heart smile cried?
Well, I mean, I try my best. So, like, it was just really cool. I felt like it really captured childhood very well. Like, you know when you're a child and you're just so confident, you know, like, yes, I am a child and I can do this, you know? And I just felt like it captured that aspect of like being a child really well. Also, like the whole figuring out who you are, we often associate that with teens as like a teen phenomenon, but it actually starts like quite a bit younger, I think. I'm no child psychologist or anything. I'm just a librarian. And like, yeah, that's my superpower.
Library powers.
And then when we get to the end and we discover Nelvana's superpower, I was like, that is the superpower that like I do try to have as a librarian. Like my job, I guess, is like, that's what I try to make people feel. So anyway.
Can we rewind actually and talk about what the story is?
Yeah, of course. So what's it about, Tanya?
Okay, so the story is about a little girl named Nelvana. You know, I might just read the back. So Nelvana feels like all of her friends have some type of superpower. She has friends with super speed, who always beat her in races, friends with super skills, who can build all kinds of things, and friends who are better than she is at a million other things. Nelvana thinks she might be the only kid in town without a superpower. Then her mom shows Nelvana that she is unique and special, and that her superpower was right in front of her all along.
That's my
I know,
heart.
Right? It's all crying. The feels. Thank you. Yes. I think this book is, it's really important. It's the storyline of it. And it's such a confidence builder, and it promotes positive reinforcement, right? So this is something that I've learned in my many, many years of therapy, is that Indigenous women especially have, I guess, issues with our confidence. And I'm saying our generally, obviously it's not every single person, but so something that builds a confidence when you're really young actually fights off anxiety and depression. So I'm a super, super fan of this book. Also, the fact that it talks about superpowers and superheroes, there's not a lot of Indigenous superheroes, let alone Inuit superheroes. I think there's one now by Marvel that came out, but oftentimes we don't really see ourselves represented as heroes. We're usually the sidekicks or princesses or one of those other tropes, right? So it definitely shows that not only can we be a superhero, but all of us are superheroes in our own way.
Yeah, and I think that's especially important for kids to know that, you know, there's always going to be somebody out there that is really good at doing one thing or another, and your friends might be really good at, you know, sports, like they said, building things, and maybe that's not your thing. And I know even myself as a kid, you know, playing sports and being like, why am I not that good? Like, why am I not winning trophies? Because that wasn't my thing. Like, and that's okay. That's okay. You know what? At least you tried. You're trying things. You're having fun. And that's always what my parents would say. You know, you're having fun. Just keep doing the thing. It doesn't matter if you're always winning or if you're the best at something. Like, you'll find your thing eventually. And I mean, I'm 32 and I still don't think I've found my thing. Like, you know, some people just have their thing that they're really good at. And I don't think I've found that thing yet. I'm just good at a lot of really awkward things. But I know, like, you know, I think I've talked about my, like, bestie a few times on the show. She was really good at hockey and sports. And for me, being, like, a chunky little kid that still to this day can't run to save my life, like, I was always like, oh, why is she so good at this? You know, that kind of self-doubt. And watching your friend be really good and getting all the praise, and then being like, I'm this chunky little kid that can't even run a base without getting tagged out because I can barely run. Like, but that's not my thing, and that's fine. And I should be proud of her thing, and like that she's really good at that, like, sports, and that I will find my thing one day. One day we'll find that thing.
I think you're just good at so many things that not one specific one sticks out, you know?
I'm mediocre at several things.
Oh, boy. Do you need to read this book again, Kayla?
I think you do.
But you know what? I'm mediocre at several things, but when you combine those several things together, it's like a superpower.
Oh, boy. Okay, well, your prescription is to read this book again.
Read it again. Have some self-reflection.
What is your superpower, Tanya?
Like, currently? Or sure. When I was a child?
Oh, you can interpret that however you want.
Okay, I guess I'll go with the child since we're talking about our picture books here. For me, my superpower is definitely storytelling and writing down stories. I was a huge nerd. I did not like to read stories, but I loved writing them. So what I would do is I would come home and I would jump onto my computer at the time and just type out weird little stories. And over Christmas or at the end of the school year, what I would do is I would print them off and wrap them up with a little bow and give them to all of my teachers. Yeah, so often I would write out my stories, and then I would actually even color and draw out the illustrations for my books. So that was something that I always loved to do, and I still love to do that. I just need to find the time to do it. Of course, my subject matter has clearly changed, probably more adult subject matter, but I still enjoy writing stories. It's just finding the time to do it as an adult. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh,
baking, maybe.
Yes. Baking yummy things.
Well, yeah, and also eating them.
Oh yeah. Kayla, what's your superpower?
Like when I was a kid or as an adult? I think as a kid, like I was really into drama. I really, really liked to act and be on stage in front of people. That was something I like was really into. So, so that I think my superpower as an adult is I'm like kind of, I don't know, unofficial mom-ish kind of. I really like to feed people. Like if you're not eating at my house, you're probably not happy. So I'm always cooking and feeding people. I don't know, Eric, what do you think my superpower is since we're talking about this?
I don't know. You're better at networking than me. That's probably, you seem to find the right people at the right time.
I don't know if you could hear that, but I don't think that's a good superpower. But
I think that's an awesome superpower. What the power of making friends.
Networking? And networking to advance my career. That's my superpower as an adult. So I went from being like drama and fun to networking.
You have the power of making friends.
I guess so. I want them to rewrite this book and be like, and Kayla's network and Kayla's superpower is networking. We need to make an adult version of this. Like, what is my superpower for The Office? Like, yeah.
Just picture of Kayla in a blazer walking around.
Yeah, exactly.
At the water cooler.
Oh, jeez.
All right, Sheila, how about you?
My superpower as a kid, I was hilarious and I was so funny and like always making jokes and like I was a class clown and like I really in grade one specifically, like I was always in trouble, always in trouble. And like, I didn't understand because I was just making the same jokes and like doing the same routine that we had at home, like with my dad and stuff. And I was like, haha, let's try this on. And like my teacher just hated it. And I was always... Yeah. Anyway, I was like, I remember distinctly like coming home from school and being like, Mom, I got in trouble again because all I said was like this joke. And my mom was like, oh, you're just the class clown. I was like, no, I'm just, I don't know. Anyway, so that was me. Like, but as an adult, I think my superpower is using my voice. Both like I do this, obviously, I guess it's, we're literally recording my voice right now. And, you know, sending emails and speaking up and like doing the thing, using my voice is my superpower. Not just staying silent.
I think that's still an amazing superpower. Your throat chakra is just through the roof.
It still gets me in trouble. I'm still in trouble all the time.
Like, I would say your superpower is still being like hilarious though. Cause
yeah,
I know every time we're
that.
Together, it's just like you are a party and I love it. So.
Oh yeah. Well, typical Gemini, like I'm absolutely hilarious and, you know, always talking and blah, blah, blah. But
actually, any last ideas before we move on? Cause there's one more thing I want to say about this book.
Sure. Yeah. What you got?
So I'm thinking about stereotypes here. And whenever we talk about Inuit, and I'm talking like more broad general Canadian society, you always see igloos and snow and this, that, and the other thing, dog sleds and stuff. But the imagery here is, it actually plays to counteract that narrative because you don't see that much snow and you see houses, not igloos. And yes, of course, there's a dog in here, but he's a pet. Like it's almost saying like, you know what? We have pets too. We're not just about snow here. We also have schools with gym and play basketball and we eat like dinners with our family. And also the fact that like it's representing a different type of family here. Cause to me, it just seems like it's a mother and a child, maybe a single mother. Mm-hmm. So representation, it's super important. And also being represented in an accurate way. Because, I mean, of course, there are some cultural elements in here, like the language and the Inuksooks and other types of things, but it's not the central piece to the story, which I think is fascinating.
I agree. And especially at the beginning when she talks about like living in a small town and like how she loves living in a small town. And I was like, yes, because I think it's so easy to just be like, oh, urban stories, urbanness. You know, I see a lot of that in children's books, I guess. But like, yeah, shout out to small towns. It's not always about big cities. So.
All right. Are we moving on to the next book?
Yeah. Kayla, do you want to introduce it?
Sure. So this was my pick for my favorite book that we read. And that's The Walrus Who Escaped by Rachel and Sean Kitzlack-Tinsey, illustrated by Anthony Brennan. So this book is about Arctic creatures. So pretty much the gist of the story is that, you know, Raven is jealous of Walrus, who can dig down really deep for clams in the ocean. So, and Walrus taunts Raven a little bit, and then eventually Raven gets so fed up that Raven conjures the power of the earth to trap Walrus. But then Raven starts doing what Walrus was doing to her and starts kind of, you know, making fun of Walrus, taunting him, shoving her tail feathers in his face, and eventually Walrus just couldn't take it anymore. And originally in the story, Walrus had really long spirally tusks, and then what happens is Walrus breaks free of the ice, breaks off his tusks, and that's how they become really long and sharp instead of coiled, and his eyes become blood red, and he becomes this huge creature, and Raven flies off all scared. So I don't know, for me, I kind of saw the moral of the story is like, you know, it's important to stick up for yourself, but don't take it too far, because then you kind of become the bully when you take it too far. So, but I love the imagery. I am really down for the illustrations. And I also really like the story. You know, there's a little bit of dark illustration in it, which I kind of like, but yeah, especially when Walrus, like, I'm holding it up to the zoom for everyone, when Walrus breaks free of the ice, I was like,
but it's kind of like Ursula from The Little Mermaid. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah, I love it. So yes, I don't know, what did you two think?
Yeah, I was really struck by the imagery too. I was like, whoa, this is such a cool looking book. I also was not familiar, like, there's a lot of Raven stories out there in the universe. And I hadn't heard this one, so that was kind of cool to see what Raven is up to in this story. Some more Raven antics. Raven is often a trickster, kind of, but to see Raven as like a more jealous character and like, I guess, vengeful and like, yeah, bully. I'm not aware of a lot of stories about Walrus as an entity, so it was like really good to, because we don't have them around in Treaty 6. So yeah, it was a really good book. I liked it. It was a very close second for me for favorites. I would use this in a story time, but for older kids, like 5-6, grade 5-6, I mean. What did you think, Tanya?
For me, just pulling that thread that you just said a little bit further, I don't know if I would use this as a story time session at a library. And the reason is that in a story time, you have about 30 minutes and you read about 3 books and you have to have like 4 songs or whatever. So there's just not enough time. It's too long. I think that this book would be absolutely fantastic for older kids, like you said, maybe during a read-in session, or this would be a really good story to read when you're curled up together as a family. Mm-hmm. Going to bed, because it's a longer one. It's a really funny one. Yeah, if you are going to use it for younger kids in a reading type situation, I would abridge it quite a bit and skip some pages. just because it is too long. Like the first page for me is really important. It talks about the strength and the power of the land, and they have land capitalized here, which I think is very cool because that kind of reinforces the fact that the land itself is a character in the story. But I don't know. I like that it sets up the story, but for kids, I don't know if they would really, I don't know. I think I need to sit on that idea a little bit more, but overall, I love this. I think the illustrations are fantastic. And in comparison to the other two books, this is more of a traditional story, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was nice to spice it up that way. I really wish that they had maybe at the beginning or the end, just a little bit about the story itself and where the story originates from, because it, like, I would classify this as a more traditional story. I don't know enough about Inuit stories,
but it might,
yeah, it would be nice to get some context.
It could just be like something that the authors
just
came
made
up with. Yeah. I think though, like, the one thing that I like about is, like, this would be really good for teaching kids about the relationship with the land, but also, you know, that when we make decisions, those decisions can live with us sometimes forever. And those relationships that we have can be affected by the decisions that we make, which I think is really important. You know, at the end of it, it talks about after everything that happened with Walrus and Raven, that Walrus kept his new tusks. He kept his red eyes and he kept the effects of the land strength, like his skin keeps the scars. He left the coast, choosing to live far out at sea among the islands. Raven's regret ran as deep as the strength of the land. In time, she returned to say she was sorry, but Walrus was gone. Such a silly little thing, she realized, fighting over food. She and Walrus never spoke again. So I think it really teaches a good a good message about relationships, not just the relationship with the land and how the land can shape us as humans, but also like how we should be having those relationships with each other. And it does it in a way that, you know, is in storybook form. And I think, you know, everybody has their, what do we like to call them? Their enemy that they're just like, even from school, you're like, oh, I can't handle that kid. Even if you haven't talked to them in 15 years, you still remember that you don't like them. So
frenemies.
Yeah.
Not even sometimes just enemies, but like, but it's like that one person that you remember that you're like, oh, I hate that person, or hate's a strong word, but it's like, you just, even like years later as an adult, you're like, oh yeah, that person's horrible. Like, it's just that relationship, but why are they so horrible to you? Like, why do you have that memory of you just really not liking them? So
I think you're right in a lot of points here. What I'm thinking about too is that what it's also teaching is that, you know, when you're angry or you're upset or jealous or feeling any sort of maybe negative emotions, sometimes we lash out at others, right? And this is the story of both lashing out at each other, but coming to realize that when you do those types of things, it affects not only you, but the people around you, right? Mm-hmm. So in a way, it's a story about if you have an action, actions affect everyone, negative actions especially.
Yep. And it is silly to fight over food. Like, it is silly. Like, come on, Raven and Walrus. Now you're not friends.
Help each other out.
Right? Oh, well, that's what happened.
Is there a short story about this one, or like a short film about this too?
I don't know, but this illustrator, this could definitely be like a short film. In my non-animator or illustrator opinion. And I would love to see it.
Just do it. I also want to note that in all three of these books, the authors and illustrators have their bios at the back, and the bios are so cute. I guess for an example, I'm looking at Rachel Kitsualik-Tinsley. She She says in her bio that she grew up dog sledding across the Arctic, living in snow houses and watching her father fight off polar bears. There is a story there. That's their next kid's book, is the dad fighting off a polar bear. I think that would be hilarious. Any last thoughts about this book?
I think people should buy it and support Inhabit Media. So that's what I think about it.
Yep. Agreed. Buy it.
All right. Next one.
So the next book that we read for today is Elisepi and Her Baby Seagull by Nancy Mike and illustrated by Charlene Chua. I like this book. This book is a bit of a journey. So it takes you on like finding this baby seagull. Elisepi's father brings home a baby seagull. Elisepi falls in love with the bird right away. She feeds and cares for her new friend named Now, and even helps Now learn to fly. So Now grows and grows and grows some more until she's big enough to fly all over town and play with other seagulls. Soon it seems like Now is ready to leave home for good, and Elisepi has to learn how to say goodbye. Yeah. Okay, so spoiler alert on that. Learning how to say goodbye physically and metaphorically and spiritually. So I would not choose this for like a regular story time. That is for sure. But that's nothing to say about like the content of the book. Like the illustrations are beautiful. I think they're really captivating. I think a child would really pay attention to this book at the right age, of course. Like I was like hooked into this book, but like hooked hook, line and sinker. I was like, okay, the bird is alive, the bird is thriving. The bird is gone and like learns to fly away and like doesn't come back. And like, oh, that's my heart, like crying. That's the sound of my heart crying. Like, oh.
Yeah, I think there's a couple different, it was really sad. Like it was really sad. My heart felt for her when like the bird didn't come back, but also like in not using my kid's brain but my adult brain, I was like, well, it's a wild seagull, like it should go back. But also then I had, you know, did it fly away and go live with the other seagulls, or did something else happen, was kind of my thinking too, which made me even a little bit more sad about the whole situation. But also, yeah, and you know, as a kid I collected, well, not frogs because they freak me out a little bit, but you know, like I had a garter snake that I found out in the lawn. I had like a couple weird little things that I found, and my dad always was like, you can't keep them in a fish tank in your room. Like it's going back. It needs to go back to the wild. So it's time for it to leave, which was always hard. And I cried as a kid and like always was like, oh, it's going to come back, but it never did. Little garter snakes, or I'm out of here. This crazy kid's playing with me. I'm done.
Yeah.
Did you have a found pet, Sheila?
Oh my goodness. I was such a dummy as a child. Like I would like sit out in the field, because like at first we lived on an acreage. And so I would sit in the field and like willingly like eat like Disney princess animals to me, and like was only mildly successful. And, like I would like try to get like animals to like come and like hang out with me, and like I'd just be like sitting in the field like dehydrated and sunburned and like dirty. But like sometimes I would like find a mouse, or like sometimes I would like, oh, there's a really funny story of like me like helping water the cattle like that we had for like we would keep some of my uncle's cattle like over the summer, and then me going like, oh, here, kitty, kitty. And like my dad like turns around and it's like, because he's like, we don't have cats. I'm like, what is what? And then I was like, oh, these are a family of like baby skunks. And he like scooped me up and like brought me back into the house. And I was like, eh. And like, I didn't understand. So I was like, oh, those four like black and white cats. Anyway, that, so with mild success, learning that wild animals are wild, and I can't manifest them very well. Like, anyway, whatever. But yeah, I do think it is important. This is an important story, because I do think it is important for children to learn that, like, not every animal is a stuffed animal, and you have to let animals do their thing. And that includes like the full like life cycle of an animal. And like, it's just always interesting, because I kind of like grew up with like a mix of like farm kids and city or like town kids. And like really like learning like, oh yeah, like animals have a special role in our lives, and like we have a role in their lives, whether they want us there or not. And we have to like let it go, let them go. Anyway,
it's true.
Yeah,
it's true. That's one thing that I had the major thing that I had a problem with this book is that, why did the dad take the seagull away from their, I don't know if he took them away from their family or if the seagull was injured or what the story was there, but I felt weird that he just showed up with this baby seagull and gave it to this girl.
Mm-hmm. But that's like a talking point for like, if you're reading it to a child, you could definitely like ask that, like, what do you think happened before this story? You know, I always.
That's actually a good idea. Yeah, and then it comes full circle. And at the end, she has to return him because she shouldn't have taken him in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it says like when her dad went out during the summertime boating, he found baby birds. So it could be that, you know, he found the eggs, he found the chicks, or, you know, maybe an abandoned baby bird, one that was hurt, something like that. It really doesn't say, but yeah.
Yeah. And I should say, like, thinking about like my life on the acreage, we also did have a cat named Lazarus. Because
that's a sick name. I love that.
Well, I was raised Catholic, and so we thought he was dead. But then he came back. And I was like, oh, Lazarus.
Like, so actually, did the cat come back the very next day?
No, he came back after the winter. We like thought he was totally dead. But
you thought he was a goner?
Yeah. Oh boy, stop it.
I had to.
Okay, so
dad
Tanya,
joke for you.
Yeah, so Tanya, you filled your dad joke quota for this episode.
Yes.
So,
I made it.
Yeah, so that's done now. So we ticked that off.
So, okay, let's. So we read Split Tooth for our last episode. I think this book in particular has a lot of themes in common with Split Tooth, because the main character also had a specific attachment or relationship to animals, right? And I think that's a common thread in a lot of Indigenous stories.
Yeah.
That teach us how to relate to our more than human relatives and how to treat them in a respectful manner, right?
Yeah. I think that's really important. Like when kids are interacting with animals, you know, learning how to do it properly. Like just having my cousins over here, like introducing them to my cats, like a few, you know, back when that wasn't illegal. Anyway, I'm like, okay, like cats are different than dogs. Like you have to be gentle with a cat, you know, like, And like they were kind of like, because the cats like jump up, you know, more than a dog, and like seeing how like they were kind of like scared of a cat, you know, like, oh, like I wasn't expecting that. And it's like, yeah, like cats have like little like razors at the end of their toes. Like, sorry, kid, like you have to be careful. And like birds learn how to fly.
Yes, they do. I want to give super credit to Elisipe too for not killing this bird and fully taking care of it.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I was young and I took some, like, I used to collect frogs and tadpoles. I used to go down to the lake and fill up my little wagon full of tadpoles and, you know, not really realizing what I was doing. The heat of the sun and the smallness of the wagon would just kill them all, and I'd be devastated. Like, what happened? Why? My frog cousins.
I think, and we were talking just about kind of how it also relates to Splittooth, and that happens in Splittooth. They accidentally, you know, harm an animal in it, and they don't mean to. And I think with kids, though, it's just, it's important, you know, a lot of kids' books can deal with really difficult subjects such as loss in a way that makes sense to kids and isn't so like blatant and in your face like adult books like Splittooth. So this is a way of like talking about loss with kids in a way that's a little bit more understandable as well. And I think, yes, loss of the seagull, but you could use this for loss of other things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, sometimes people are there and then they don't come back. So I think it could be a really good learning tool. And I mean, the illustrations are really cute too. Like the little gray fluffy seagull, like that's kind of the thing that really warmed my heart. I'm like, oh, cause like living near the ocean, we get seagulls all the time, but the babies are so cute. They're like these little gray fluff balls. Once they get hair, before that, they're not so cute. So
mm-hmm. What did you two think about how they dealt with the different languages in, I guess it's Elisipe and What's My Superpower? One of them has a little seagull asterisk in Elisipe, and the other one has a glossary at the back. What do you like better?
I like having it right there, because as I'm reading, I'm like, oh, just look down at the kind of the bottom of the page, almost like a little footnote. And it was there, and it was the word, and also the kind of, in some case, like the explanation, like the knick, which is the kiss. And I like seeing just the little seagull looking down at the bottom for the other little seagull. And then it gives a description of what the word is and how to do it with the proper pronunciation was really nice too. So I like that better than flipping to a glossary. And I think that might be a little bit easier for kids. Cause then you could just say, oh, look, there's a little seagull. Where else can you find the little seagull? And then read it out and be like, that's what that word means. But that's just my preference.
I agree. The lazy part of me is like, yes, I agree with this 100%. But then I started thinking, I mean, when you don't include the word right beside it, it challenges you a little bit more to look into it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to play neutral, and I'm going to say I really like both aspects, because I think that it's a teachable moment. Kids the chance to learn like book literacy. So like sometimes there's information about the main part of the book on the page, but then also other times you can find information throughout the book at the back. So I think that the point, or well, one of the points of doing story times and you know, reading books to children is, you know, being interrupted and like talking about and like using the book to talk about, you know, just to have a conversation about what's inside the book. Mm-hmm. So I think those information points throughout the book are that chance to do that. also to like look at the cute pictures too. So, and like that's like also just as valid of a source of information throughout mm-hmm. like children's literature as much as like a glossary or a footnote or a whatever.
Yeah, and I think the illustrations in this book are especially adorable. When she's throwing the seagull into the air, trying to get it to fly, and it's so just like, I love how happy it is. I mean, I feel like a seagull wouldn't be so happy to be thrown in the air, but like, it's so cute when it falls on its little bum because it can't fly, and also it looks like it might be a little bit chubby. So that was really cute.
Poor guy.
But what baby isn't chubby?
That's, you know? Well, he's a full-grown adult at this point, so.
Wow.
He's eaten all that krill and
too many treats.
Yeah. And all the krill, all the blubber, all the good things. And he was just hungry all the time. He's, yeah, it's really cute. Also, I would love to, like, I mean, not that you should, because keep wild animals wild, but where she's just walking down, like, the street with him, like, walking through, like, downtown with her strutting her seagull around. I mean, I kind of wish I had a seagull just to walk around.
Okay, funny story. So I learned how to troll from my dad, like, of course, like, as is the tradition of our people. And, like, when my dad would, like, bring me to the dump, which is, like, the best, like the highlight, like, best day ever, he, like, told me that seagulls were actually white crows. And that, like, crows were actually, like, black seagulls. And I was so dumb. Like, I believed that until, like, quite a long time. Like, and finally, like, got told in school, like, when I was, like, those aren't seagulls. Those are white crows. And, like, all the other kids in my class were like, you're an idiot. Where did you learn that? I was like, in the back of my dad's Bronco going to the dump. Like, I was so stupid.
I mean, your dad, yeah, like, your dad had a nicer way of describing them than my dad did, so.
Oh, yeah. This is a family-friendly episode, Kayla.
I'm not going to say it, but use your imagination.
Anyway, yeah, so, like, that's a memory I have as a child with seagulls, being like,
yeah, there's totally a meme there. Oh, I was blank years old when I realized seagulls were not black crows. Or white crows.
Yeah, white crows. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I got trolled forever. Because you don't know. Like, when your dad just, like, tells you something, it's like, I'm three. Okay.
So we have time for one more, I guess, talking point listener question. And I wanted to save this to last because I think it's opening a can of worms a little bit. So something that the three of us were discussing before we hit the record button was the fact that all of these books are written by Indigenous authors, yet none of them are illustrated by Indigenous illustrators. Is that a problem, or is there a problem with that?
I mean, they draw better than I could. So, like, they're great drawings. So, like, they're fantastically illustrated.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's always great to support Indigenous folks when they are creative. It's a lot more than just, like, and we've learned this through working with publishers. It's a lot more than just, like, oh, they're Indigenous, they get to do this. Like, there's preferred, like, illustrators. But also, I think the one thing is that, you know, the authors would still have to sign off on this. If they didn't want somebody, like, if they didn't like the illustrations, they wouldn't sign off on it. So I think that's, like, one thing to be cognizant of. But yeah, I mean, it's great to support Indigenous people, Indigenous creators, but there's a lot that goes into it that's just, like, I think that's even out of the author's control. Like, it's about the publishing companies, so.
Yeah, from my understanding, the publishing houses have a set amount or set number of illustrators that they work with, and they kind of pair the story up to the illustrator that they think is best. Don't quote me on that. That's just, like, what I think is kind of going on from my little experience working with the publishers. I wonder though, like if you are self-publishing, obviously you have a lot more control over what it is that's going out. That being said, if you self-publish, then you're sacrificing a lot of like distribution and advertising, this, that, and the other things. So there's positives and negatives to both, I would say. Mm-hmm. And I always lean towards put the money in, if there is an Indigenous project, try to pay Indigenous peoples for that project.
Yeah, of course. Like, I think it's fine. Like, the all three illustrators, like, did
an awesome job, right?
Yeah, so yeah. I think we just need to amplify, like, Indigenous illustrator voices. Like, or... Well, yeah, voices, like voices through
an artistic medium.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's still like a voice. Anyway, I don't need to think too hard about that. But yes, there's a thought there. But
yeah, so like Inhabit does list on their website, they do have a tab that says like illustrators, and they do have a few from just like looking through it, like a few illustrators who actually are Indigenous, but I think the story has to fit the illustration, right? So it has to be like the right illustrator for that story. So they do have, but you know, they might not had the right illustrator for like LCP or What's My Superpower, like that would have just fit with the vision and the story. So
I think we need to interview someone from Inhabit Media to get the answers of how does this work and why did you make these decisions?
Yeah,
future episode.
I definitely think that would be a really great and a really interesting conversation to have.
There we go. That's our open invitation. Inhabit Media, come on down.
Yeah, slide into our DMs.
Okay, yeah. So... I guess we want to definitely plug the participation in this podcast and the fact that you can participate even after we've made an episode. So we've gotten some comments here about Split Tooth. Yeah, so you can participate and ask your questions through our website. You can do it through social media, pretty much any way that you can get in contact with us. Even if you are posting about episodes that we've done in the past, we want to hear your comments. And one example is from Elise. Thank you so much for sending us this message. She was commenting on Split Tooth. And I'm not going to lie, when I was reading it, this comment, I was reading Tanya as in myself, not Tanya as in the author. So I was like, thank you. I did a great job. It was not me. So she's saying that she laughed, shivered, or cried. As someone who's experienced many kinds of violence, I feel like Tanya Tagak, not me, did a good job at expressing the myriad of feelings and experiences attached to that experience, which is anger, fear, sadness, longing, attraction, shame, and disassociation. The out-of-body experiences that the narrator has are truly beautiful and terrifying. I think it's a part of the allegory, but part of it is also being a young woman trying to cope with her reality of violence and hopelessness by transforming it into something otherworldly in her mind. Yeah, I agree. And we actually did talk about the out-of-body experiences in our last episode, hey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some tools to get you back in your body after reading or experiencing something.
Yeah, disassociation is so powerful. Like your spirit just does not want to stick in your body. Bring it back.
And if anyone has any questions, comments, thoughts that they want to share with us about the books that we read for this episode, please leave a comment on our website, bookwomenpodcast.ca. Send us an email, bookwomenpodcast@gmail.com. We also have Twitter. You guessed it. We're at Book Women. You can find us lots of places, and we would love to hear from you.
So what are we reading next? We are doing graphic novels next. So we are publishing on March 23rd. So we will be recording sometime that weekend. So get your comments in. We are reading. I always feel like I'm going to mess this up. I need to look up the pronunciation before we record our next episode. So it's Dakwakata Warriors by Cole Pauls and A Girl Called Echo Volume 1 by Katrina Vermette. Both of them, like I said, are graphic novels. If you need help locating a copy from your local library, or if you want to purchase them through a local bookstore, let us know. We can try and help you out.
Yeah, and we have some shout outs from our sponsors to the Indigenous Education Initiative at Workland School of Education, as well as ILSA, the Indigenous Literary Studies Association, SHRC, and ACUTE, which
is the Association of Canadian and College University Teachers of English.
English, not education. Yes.
You were close.
You're so close.
You know what? Libraries, academia loves, we love acronyms, and there's a lot of acronyms out there.
We're just trying to keep them all straight. Like, where's my head at? Seriously.
But yes, we are very thankful for our funders that are making this possible, as well as all the books that are being sent to us from places like Inhabit Media, as well as the Glass Bookshop is also sending us stuff. So I got a lovely package from them the other day, and the Glass Bookshop is an independent bookshop in Edmonton that supports Indigenous and people of color and queer authors. So if you're in the Edmonton area, check them out. If you're in other places, check out your local bookstores. One of my favorites here in Vancouver is Iron Dog. Really enjoy them. As well as Massey Books. They are Indigenous bookstores, so it's always a good place to take a look for your Indigenous reads.
We have a lot of shout-outs to make out, hey?
We do.
Oh, hey.
You know
Lots
what?
Lots of people to thank. Oh, my goodness.
Lots of people
like
to thank.
This podcast is a community that we need to work
lots
out.
Of people to thank. Lots of people that's given us love, and it's always nice to feel loved by others. So yes, and
we also want to show the listeners the love through our giveaways.
Yes,
send in your questions and comments and we will send you some free stuff. It can be earrings from Indigenous artists or a copy of the books that we read for this episode. So get your stuff in.
So thank you, everybody, for being here for this episode, and we will see you next one. Hi, and have a great day.